So first, introduce yourself.
I'm Louise Fletcher.
So before you were cast as Nurse Ratched, where were you in your professional career? What did it feel like was happening in your career?
Well, I'll try not to make this a long story. Not that long before, maybe 2 years, I had done a movie for Robert Altman. But before that, I had left the business 11 years before when I had my second child, and I had no plans to return to it.
Really? So you thought you'd retired at 30?
Yes, exactly. And I was quite happy living my life and being a mom. And my husband was a producer, so I sort of was in show business by marriage and enjoyed it, and only occasionally felt terrible jealousy when I would go to the movies and see women having a wonderful time. But we were on a location for a movie that my husband was producing and Robert Altman directing. And Robert Altman wanted me to do a part in this movie. And I said, no, thank you. I don't want to be in a movie my husband produces because I don't want the looks from the other actors. You didn't expect this answer, did you?
I'm happy for the answer. What was the film?
Thieves Like Us. In any case, he didn't hire anyone else, Robert Altman. So on the day, I did it. And this movie was pretty good, and I got marvelous reviews, which was shocking to me. And so about a few months later, I decided, well, maybe I should try to go back to work. My children are just about teenagers. But getting back to work wasn't as easy as I thought. And I was in that process of trying to find an agent and making a list of agents I knew and agents I didn't know. And I exhausted the agents I didn't know and was working on the agents I did know when I found someone from before in a former life who said he'd take a chance and represent me, but he didn't want to sign papers. Just take a shot. And then I got a call that Milos Forman wanted to see me. He had seen Thieves Like Us for Shelley Duvall, who was in the movie too, and for one of the parts of the girls who come on the ward and have a party. And he saw me in this movie and said, "Who's that?" And they did some sleuthing and found out, you know, that had kind of a not bad reputation. So he asked to see me. And I saw him about 4 or 5 times over a period of a year.
Really?
And I would go in and see him on his request, read, talk, kind of have a nice conversation over an hour and a half. He found out a lot about me. I found out nothing about him. And then we'd read together, and he'd playing all the other parts. And then he'd tell me to go home. You're not getting this part. Forget about it. And I was mature enough at that time that I never took those things personally anymore. And I would go home and forget about it. And then finally, that started in January, February. And by December, that was my last interview. And we went to tape some scenes so that the producers, who didn't believe him that I was any good, he told me that, we were going to tape some scenes and show them. And we got to the location where we were going to do this in some little shabby office building on La Brea. And the cinematographer didn't show up. So the producers were there, and he and I were there. And so we just did 3 or 4 scenes as in a play. And
you must have known the lines by that point.
I knew the lines perfectly by that point. I knew the lines because I knew we were going to tape. So anyway, I was the last person cast a week before the movie started shooting. And little did I know that over that year's period, they were offering it to many actresses. I don't know what...
One hears of Anne Bancroft, Geraldine Page, actor after actor.
Yeah, Angela Lansbury. I mean, I heard many, many, many names.
Yes.
And so I didn't find that out until we were about halfway through the movie. And, of course, by the time I got the part, I thought, well, there's no one else on the face of this earth who can play this part but me. So...
Why do you suppose all of the actors who apparently reportedly turned it down?
Maybe they were busy.
Well, it's a tough one though, right? I mean, you in this movie that is the great anti-authority movie, you are the big bad authority figure.
Well, that's one thing, but also you have to remember another thing. No studio in town would touch this movie. It was a very extremely independent movie. The money was being put up by one guy. It kind of didn't have a lot of stability for a big movie star. And they weren't paying big movie star salaries. They didn't have the money. So, and also the director was Czech. And this is a very American kind of story. So maybe... Milos had made Taking Off already. I don't know that would have been such an objection because that was so well done. But maybe all those things put together.
It looked iffy for some people, yeah.
Or maybe they just, they read the play, maybe, and maybe they thought this villain was too villainous, too... stereotypical, and you knew nothing about her ever. You find out not one detail about Nurse Ratched except what you see on the screen. There's no history, there's no what did she do before and what made her the way she is. You don't know anything about that. So it's quite a challenge. I've had 37 years to think about this. Who's counting, right? But I've given it a lot of thought over the years because people ask me this question, why do you think she was the way she was? You could make up lots of stories to account for that. But to make her a real person and really frightening instead of just, a Darth Vader type, which has its place, Darth Vader types. I'm just saying he has his place in movies. But for a really frightening villain, you need someone who is a real person.
And that was your challenge, right?
I saw that as my big challenge, yeah.
So you had a year to think about this character.
I never thought about
really?
It until I had it.
Really?
I could not invest. I obviously read the book. I'd read the book anyway in the 60s. But was it 60s?
Early 60s. Yeah. 62 was published, 63.
I had never seen the play, but I did read the play. But when Milos would say, go home and forget about this, I did. I had a big life.
Right.
I had a big life.
Right. And so I assume, therefore, that since you were then suddenly cast at the last second, you didn't have time to go visit mental hospitals or talk to nurses or do any of research you might have done.
No, but one wonderful thing that they were able to do was they gave us a week at the hospital in Salem, Oregon, of preparation with, rehearsals and wandering around and speaking to people and interviewing nurses and the head of the hospital, who was so fantastically cooperative and wonderful himself. And I got to sit in on group therapy And we actually, Jack and I actually saw electroshock therapy.
What was that like?
Oh, that was like it was in the movie. It was exactly like that. People think it was exaggerated. It wasn't. It wasn't.
So you spent some time at the hospital. You shot scenes at the hospital. Did you bring pieces of people you knew to that character, or was this invented out of...
Definitely brought lots of people who had been in my life. We all have people in our lives who want to control us or use their power over us, or we have examples in every part of our lives, in our academic careers or work life or marriage or politics, of people who abuse their power. And this wasn't too long after Watergate. And I was a very involved Watergateian.
A scholar, an amateur scholar of Watergate?
I was obsessed, really obsessed. And my letter writing became, you know, perfection at the time of Watergate. I wrote so many letters to Washington, to everyone I could think of. But, you know, I brought a lot of that with me.
Well, I think, it seems to me that one of the reasons this movie struck such a chord is exactly, as you say, that it comes right at the end of Vietnam, right after Watergate, that it was a sweet spot you were going into.
Yes. You know, how many people in positions of power feel that they know best? And it's nice of you to think you know better than I and that you could help me, but in fact, I know what's best for these people. I'm in their corner. I'm doing everything I know how to do to help them. And
that's interesting. So you imagined this person, this Nurse Ratched, as being well-intentioned.
Totally. Totally well-intentioned. That's what's so scary. It's the little lady next door who sees you over the picket fence and is all, you know, just the most adorable, sweet, smiling person. And she's got someone wrapped up in the basement. You know, that's the one you have to be afraid of. And that's the way I saw her.
Did you reread the novel before you?
Yes.
And did that help you make certain choices in how you played the role?
No. You know, the novel is all due respect. You know, you couldn't play her unless you could somehow hook up some steam coming out of your ears. In my opinion, the most brilliant thing about One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest in realizing its potential was the change of the point of view when they told the story for the screen. And I've thought about it long and hard, and I think Milos maybe to him it was just the only way it could be done. We never had that conversation. I wish I had had that conversation. He told the story from day one when McMurphy arrives until the last day. And he just let it unfold. This is a narrative. It's a story. And it's not told through anyone's point of view, like Chief Bromden's point of view, like it was in the book, which made a different story.
Entirely. So you really conceived from the beginning that Nurse Ratched sees herself as a force for good, trying to quell this chaos of these damaged people.
Well, it was written that way in the screenplay.
Yeah.
It was not written like the novel. It was written that he arrives, there is this nurse who's in charge of everything. She's all smiles. She tells him what the rules are and how to get along. And he'll be fine as long as he plays by these rules. Well, whose rules are they? They are her rules. and the hospital rules. But, you know, if you recall in that meeting with, when she has a meeting in the hospital with the other doctors, you see, I'm back into it now. I'm saying the other doctor, she wasn't a doctor. She was a nurse, but she felt like a doctor. She's all, you know, sweetness and light, and I think he'll be better off with me. I think I can take care of, because they want to send him on somewhere else. And she doesn't let that happen. She cannot let that happen. He is not going to get the best of her.
He's a tough nut, but she wants to crack it. And did you imagine, but you imagined that as not an attempt in her, on her part, to be evil, but to help him.
She, absolutely, she doesn't see her behavior as it really is. Who does? Who does? Who sees that they're really evil? Not very many villains.
What was the production process like? Was it different than other films you had made or have made since?
Yes, it was different. Number one, we had a week's rehearsal. The production was incredibly generous to do that. And another thing they did was, for all the actors, they had a couple of tables full of things that were handpicked and chosen by some brilliant person. Maybe even Paul Silbert, I don't know. But maybe he had the idea. I don't know. Somebody had the idea. And we were allowed to go to those tables and choose your props for what you would keep with you the whole production. So when you got dressed, you had your pen, your little nurse's pen, your little pencils or whatever, your book, your record book. And the inmates got to choose their objects that they had in their pockets, or it was an enriching experience for your characters.
What were your objects?
I had a record book, I had a ink pen, a pencil, some pins, nurses' pins, and a nameplate.
Did shooting at the Oregon State Mental Hospital and having actual patients involved change the nature of the operation?
I think it just added to the authenticity completely. And the other great gift that was given was we shot in sequence. So day one was day one. That hardly ever happens on a movie. And the only thing out of sequence was the boat trip, and I think that was it.
Huh. And what kind of direction did Milos Forman give you?
I think we had all our conversations over that year period. And aside from the fact that the first couple of days when everyone was very, very nervous, on the first day, when we started and McMurphy comes onto the ward, and I greet him, and I tilted my head. Hello, welcome, and if you play by the blah, blah, blah. So Milos said, don't tilt your head. It's too weak. I'm sure he didn't know how devastating that would be to me. Because that was saying to me that I had to think it through, even to what I did with my head, because normally in my way of working, I don't think of things like that. If I tilt my head, it happens for a reason. And I froze, and Jack Nicholson noticed immediately that there was something wrong on take two, and he said, what's wrong? And I said, well, he told me not to tilt my head when I greet you, and I don't know how I'm going to keep from doing that, because that's what I do, and that's what happens. Because it wasn't that I thought she was wanted to be feminine. It's just that I wanted that to be part of it, or it came out that way, which I thought would be good, real. So what we got probably was pretty bad, because when the dailies came back, Milos told me, okay, forget what I said, we're going to reshoot that. And
that was the end of him directing you?
And, he was very, very interested, and he wanted the voices to be very appropriate and real. And because he spoke, his English was broken English, kind of, you know, with a heavy Czech accent, his ear didn't allow him to know whether something was exactly right. So he needed a lot of help from us and others, probably, his editor, whoever, that he would say, is it real? Is it real? Do they speak this way? And so he wanted, and he was very successful in getting what he wanted.
Was this an instance, this production, where any of the relationships between the characters, between you and McMurphy, bled over into Louise and Jack afterwards? Or were you just, was there any of that methody, I will stay in character all the time thing going on?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, you carry it with you, for sure. And, I was so tempted to go out with these guys every night, which they did. You know, they were a pack, and they would go out on and have dinner and have drinks and have fun every single night. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't do it. I needed that space between us. I saw it as a huge sacrifice, because I wanted to be having fun too. But I kept apart from them.
Interesting. And did that help, do you think?
Definitely it helped.
You could then be the...
I couldn't get a really good smile on my face for a month or so after. Not a really good...
Really, you could only do that fake Nurse Ratched smile?
Not a good Louise smile, no.
Yeah. That's funny. I've read that she is not named. You came up with her name. Is that right?
Yeah, one day, Jack... I had a name in my own mind. And Jack said, what's her name? This was very early on. And I said, and it shocked me when he asked me that. I said, you know, we go back. We had the same acting teacher.
You and Jack.
Jack,
Nicholson.
And we were in the same class for a little
so
while,
you knew each
many
other.
Years before.
Yeah.
Anyway, he said, what's her name? I said, Mildred. Oh, he clocked that. And then about halfway through the movie, he comes back from his first shock treatment. And he acts crazy, acts like he's demented when he comes in, and all the boys are very nervous about him. And then he snaps back. He snaps back, and he walks toward his chair, and he says, hello, Mildred. And I turned red, completely red. I blushed. It was beautiful, because we had two cameras going at the same time. Thank God. It was so good. He planted that early.
Well, and as you say, since there's no backstory for who she is or how she got here, even that first name and then the blush gives some sense of that.
You know? Yeah, definitely.
Her hairstyle is unusual, because even in the period that it is depicting, it's old-fashioned looking.
Right.
How did that come to be?
I have a friend, Carrie White, who's a hairdresser, and much more than a hairdresser. And she came up with that hairstyle. We talked about it sometime between January and December, you know, just laughing about it. And on the day that I was going to do this taping, she helped me devise this kind of hairdo, and I kind of did something on that order when I went in for that meeting. And so she called me the next day or two, because she lived across the street from Michael Douglas. And she was over there, and she heard this woman named Louise Fletcher got this part. And she called me up on the... And she knew me as Louise Bick, my married name, never dreaming that I had another name. And she called me up, and she said, "Well, I can't believe that somebody named Louise Fletcher got your part, and she has your same first name." Yes, and so she has written a book recently about her life, and she put a picture in the book of that hairdo and talked about that.
Well, re-seeing it, it made me think, as I maybe unconsciously thought when I first saw it, of here's a woman who, when she was just coming of age, this was the fashionable style, and she just stuck with it for the next 15, 20 years.
That's always a good thing to have. It's a hairdo that's retro.
Yeah.
It says a lot about a person.
How would you describe the relationship between Mildred Ratched and McMurphy?
Well, here's a woman of a certain age, not old, not young, whose life is moving along, and she has complete control of it and everything around her, when suddenly someone appears and shakes her world up, and she doesn't like it one bit. It's a little exciting, but she knows that eventually she will win. That's the way I see it.
And everybody else has been obedient, and here's the one who's not being obedient.
Exactly. And when it's all over, and she's wearing her neck brace, she's very happy.
Do you feel as though, I mean, that your success in that role, and that people know you and know it, and was a large part of the success of that movie, was about you plus Jack Nicholson? Was that key? I mean, if it had been some other actor, might you have not been as extraordinary in that role?
It's possible. Certainly possible, because I was certainly feeling and listening to what was going on around me, and very attuned to every little thing that he did. And I thought that Mildred Ratched would be noticing every little thing that he did too. I certainly was in that mood to scrutinize him and be excited by him, and yet afraid of what could happen. I mean, lots of bad things happen in my world there.
Did you have conversations, the two of you, about let's do this differently?
No.
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 You just did it?
We just did it. The only thing we rehearsed was the choking thing.
Which was an incredibly realistic-looking scene.
I know. It's all due to him. He said, "We're going to do the Yiddish school of acting." I said, "Oh, God, what's that?" He said, "You try to make me choke you, and I try not to choke you. And it looks the same, but it doesn't feel nearly as bad afterward."
Did you choreograph it?
Yeah, yeah, I did.
Did it hurt?
It did, you know, just a little. Just, you know, I had a couple of little bruises on my neck, but we had a little accident shooting as it so often happens, off camera. We were off camera doing it for the guards, and one of the guards kind of overreacted in his reaction. We fell down between two cameras, and I got hurt then. But not bad.
So, at the Oscars in 1976, this film was nominated for 9 Academy Awards, and won in 5, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Screenplay, and you, of course, for Best Actress. As you've said, you've had 37 years to think about this. What do you think so resonated with this performance with people?
My performance? I don't think... I think it's the story has an appeal that is universal. It's a story we've heard a million times. No greater love hath any man than to give it for his friends. It resonated with every nationality and every population all around the world. And I think Nurse Ratched is a very important part of this movie. Obviously, if she hadn't been evil incarnate, it wouldn't have worked as well. And so I take great pride in that. But without that story, you know, I've played some other villains. And there are a lot of directors who are afraid to let you play a villain as a person. They don't understand. They want to be afraid in a kind of scary movie way.
Rather than the grays that actual villains have.
Exactly. So, I made a movie called Flowers in the Attic once. I hate to even talk about it, but it was one of the most uncomfortable working experiences, which was that I could not satisfy the director. And I couldn't scare him enough. And that was his direction, scare me to death. And I just, you know, couldn't speak his language in any way. I got through it, but it was hard, really hard.
Well, I suppose also once you've played this nuanced, ultimate, scary person and won an Oscar for it and all this acclaim, everybody then imagines that becomes the bar you have to reach, I guess.
I guess so.
So, winning the Oscar changed your life, yeah?
Well, certainly is something that has added. It's a wonderful thing to have. I don't think it changes your life, really. I don't think so. I mean, I forget it's there a lot of the time.
But do you think you've worked more as a result of it?
Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. I can't say that. It's possible.
Has being identified so closely with this one performance and this character had any negative effects in your life?
Well, I suppose there could have been parts that I could have played that people didn't want to take a chance that I couldn't play them. You know, it's taken me a long time to play a nice grandma, let's say, or, you know, a nice person. Judges, maybe, you know. It kind of held me back a little, but I've overcome that, I think.
Do people in real life, who obviously must recognize you and often recognize you for that role, is their view of you influenced by that?
Absolutely. I think people find it very hard to think that you're not like what they see on the screen. I mean, my poor father was so troubled by the fact that I played this villain and it was so successful at it that we could go to, let's say, a restaurant, you know, and people wouldn't even know that who I was, really. He just thought everybody knew who I was. And he would say, oh, she's not really like that, you know. And they didn't know what he was talking about. It was pretty funny.
So people weren't as scared of you as
no,
he feared?
No, I've had people come up to me at the airport and threatened, you know, say, I've hated you all my life. And
but they say this with a smile, I hope.
Pretty much. There was one airport scene that I had to get help. But it was pretty soon after the movie.
Really?
And I've had people come up to me and say, I just came out of the hospital and I, you know, it's frightening sometimes. People who are mentally ill and who have seen the movie, you know.
Why? I mean, people remember the McMurphy character. And I suppose they remember some of the other characters. But it is your character who I think is in a certain way most deeply resonant with people 35 years later. Why do you think that is?
I think people remember the villain a lot, you know, because they're terrified. I mean, they're, let's see, what am I ranked? Third or fourth all-time villains?
Is that right?
Something like that, by the AFI. Darth Vader's on there, and Anthony Hopkins for...
The Cannibal
Lecter.
Yeah.
Right. So, villains are memorable. Yeah.
The book is sometimes criticized for being misogynistic, and the great evil villain is this woman. Do you think that criticism has any merit?
It could have had merit. I'm not sure. Nurse Ratched could have been a man, but I don't think so. I think it was important to... I don't remember the name of the writer.
Ken Kesey.
I think it was important to Ken Kesey that she's a woman. Now, whether he was misogynist or, you know, just a sexist, it would be hard not to be from that generation. You know, could be forgivable.
Although just dramatically, it sets up a whole other interesting set of tensions to have it be two genders.
Yeah, I think it's important that she's a woman.
If somebody had never seen the movie, never heard of it, and they say, so what's this story about? What is your capsule summary of Cuckoo's Nest?
No greater love hath any man. That is my capsule for it. That's what I believe.
It's about friendship.
It's the Christ story.
So you are...
Otherwise, why didn't he leave? He had the window open and everything. He could have gotten away. That was a big thing that I know the night that happened. I was not on the ward, you know. I was not in that scene. That was another thing about this movie. Actors who were not working that day would come to see what was happening and watch what was being shot, because it was just too great what was going on. So that was kind of a prelude to what happened later, because you felt that there was some really marvelous work being done and you didn't want to miss it.
That's interesting. And I suppose because it's done in sequence, that became a more
sure.
a thing you could do.
Sure. And so I know the window was open and McMurphy was sitting there. He had a lot to drink and everybody was passed out around him. He could have gotten through the window, and Jack was trying to justify that in his own mind. Why wouldn't I go through this window now? And are they going to believe that I, you know, he had a big problem with it, which he overcame, obviously, because the story lets him overcome it. And so I think it's the Christ story. To me, that's what it is.
So you're Pontius Pilate, I guess, or something like that?
I guess so.
Do you think the movie, because it's a movie, in great measure has overtaken the novel? Are they different stories? Is it a better execution of the story than the novel, do you think?
It's certainly a more commercial execution of it, I think, more appealing to larger number of people, and as well done as it could ever be done, I would imagine. I can't imagine it being done any better. You know, I can't imagine a remake, can you?
I cannot.
Going back to what you said before about Ken Kesey, I heard that Ken Kesey called our version, the film version, the Hogan's Heroes of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Well, I thought that was pretty funny. Because I can imagine, you know, the basketball and the boat trip, what that must have, you know. And
the wackiness?
The wackiness, the comedy. The comedy that's not in the book, you know, but... Milos Forman is famous for comedy. And he found a way to tell this heartbreaking story and some of it in comedy, which is an enormous release for the audience.
Absolutely.
And brilliantly done.
I have to think, and it's hard to pinpoint, but I have to think that this film, because it's this hugely successful film that many, many millions of people have seen, and the time that it came, affected the way people think about the way we treat mental patients, the way we think about electroconvulsive therapy, all those things. Do you ever think about that? Its real world effects?
I do think that maybe electroshock therapy has gotten a bad rap, because I know that it's very helpful in many cases of depression. Severe depression and clinical depression. And but I think most of the world knows that now, that it is helpful. And it's just too bad that Nurse Ratched used it as punishment, you know, and had the power to prescribe that. Or have it prescribed. I don't suppose she could write the order for that. Would have to be a doctor. But we didn't get into that problem.
No. Well, I think it has taken some years, perhaps because of this movie, to have the virtues of electroshock therapy become understood again.
Yes, I think you're right.
And also the idea that some people do indeed need to be institutionalized. I mean, the late 60s and the 70s were a time when the idea was, no, nobody should be in a hospital. Nobody should be locked up.
Unless they want to be.
Yeah.
Unless they want to be, and we're just going to let them all out.
Yeah.
And now they're homeless on the street.
Did you ever meet Kesey?
No. I never met Ken Kesey. But I know that... Saul Zance and Michael Douglas met him. I'm not sure about Jack Nicholson or Milos, but and I know that he wrote a version. He wrote a script, and apparently it was by the pound. I think he wrote a very long script.
He wrote a miniseries.
I never saw it, yeah. But I just heard about it.
Yeah,
and that he wasn't happy. I heard that he was not happy with us at all.
I think novelists are. When they sell the rights to their work, need to understand that, need to write off the...
Forget about it. It's gone forever.
Exactly. Yeah.
Unless you're Don
Excellent.
Irving.
Yeah, exactly. They're all happy in New York.
Oh, good. Okay.
So we are done.
Were they listening?
They were listening.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Thank you.